Welcome to the first ever Broom Docs podcast. That was Howling Wolf, one of my favourite blues artists. And my name's Casey Parker. I'm the author of the Broom Docs blog, and if you've been following for a while, you know that we're up to about 170 posts, and I've decided finally to make the jump into audio land. Why have I done this? Well, I've got a lot of reader feedback saying that I've been having a lot of problems trying to read and run at the same time, and a few people have had some serious injuries, so just to protect you people, I've decided to put this out there in an audio format that you can download, listen to at your own leisure, and maybe get some exercise while you're doing it. The main reason that I wanted to go audio is because I have a lot of great conversations with colleagues and other practitioners from around the world about what it is that we do on a day-to-day basis, and I really want to share that information with you. And so I'd really appreciate your feedback, or if you have any tips or criticisms, just to hit me on the email, which is, as always, broomdocs, broomedocs, @gmail.com. Anyway, without further ado, on to episode one. In this first episode, I wanted to go back to a post that I wrote way back in March 2012, which was about the management of cervical spine trauma in a small town. A small town that doesn't have any radiology, or a small town that doesn't have a CT scanner, because I think most of us that work out in these environments find it really tough. And for me, this is a great way of illustrating how it is that we need to do things differently, think differently, and really come up with some great quality care for patients. Dilemma really illustrates a lot of the resource management issues, decision-making issues, and ethical principles that we as rural doctors need to follow in order to ensure that our patients get the same standard of care that a patient would in any large city hospital. Clearly, resources and finances and the logistics of distance sometimes make this impossible, but I certainly don't think that our level of knowledge or our ability to make these decisions should be a factor into deciding what level of care a patient receives. All right, enough waffling. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. So you've got a patient that's been brought in by the ambulance. They're usually wearing a cervical spine collar when they get to you, and you have to decide what you're going to do with them. And in my world, you can divide them into four main groups. The first group that we'll talk about are the minor injuries. So the people who you know from the end of bed, from taking the history, getting the mechanism of injury, looking at the patient and examining their spine, it's very unlikely that they have anything wrong with them. This group, it's very easy to say, oh, that's fine, take the collar off, you'll be fine. But I think in order to cover yourself and to make sure that you're doing the right thing by the patient, you need to use a clinical decision guide here. And there's a couple of really easy-to-use tools out there, which do take a little bit of getting used to. But my recommendation is that you go to the wonderful mdcalc.com website, and they're right there in front of you. Easy, easy, easy. You just go to that website, plug in Nexus, or if you prefer, the Canadian C-spine rules, and you run through it with your patient. You look at the mechanism of injury, whether they have any of the criteria that would exclude them from being potentially clearable without having any imaging, and you classify them into either a very low risk group, i.e. Nexus negative. So if you've got none of the criteria on the Nexus protocol, then you really don't need to have any sort of imaging done of your spine. Or you put them into the Canadian C-spine rule. If they don't have any risk factors in the first sort of column of the Canadian C-spine rule, and then you can clear them clinically, you can then move their neck. If they still don't have any symptoms, then you really can clear them. So for the low-risk group, the ones that have had a pretty minor mechanism of injury, they don't have any symptoms, they certainly don't have any paresthesia or numbness or tingling in their limbs, and you're happy that you can clear them clinically, you should do that. Because working out in a remote area, your next best step really is transferring that person a long way on a spinal board for a CT. And I currently work in a hospital that does have a CT scanner, and I can assure you that quite often we receive patients where they haven't had this sort of clearance done, And sometimes when you go back and you take the history, you realize that this patient's been transferred a long way and been put through a lot of discomfort on a spinal board, really without any need. And when you take the history, they really didn't meet the criteria. They were young, fit, healthy, minor mechanism of injury, no sort of distracting injuries, no intoxication, nothing to suggest that they needed imaging. And we can do this. So if you're out there in a small town that doesn't have any imaging facilities, for this group of patients, you can potentially do them a favour. You can take them from being on an uncomfortable spinal board with a collar on to being sitting up and walking and getting on with their life. Okay, the next group of patients I want to talk about is the other end of the spectrum, the severe patient, the patient that's had a major mechanism of injury and they've presented with symptoms. So they've either got some weakness or some numbness or a motor or sensory level, or potentially even worse, maybe complete paralysis below a level. And this group of patients in some ways is also easy if you work in a remote area. Sure, they're tough, there's lots of things that you need to think about in a short space of time, but in terms of decision making and disposition, this is easy. It's a bit of a no-brainer. This person needs to get to a neurosurgical unit as soon as possible, and in the meantime they need to have their resuscitation, their ABCs taken care of, such that they don't suffer any secondary mechanism of injury such as hypotension or hypoxia, which could potentially make their injury worse. The main thing that we worry about as bush doctors is that we're going to do something to their neck which is going to make their injury worse, such as move that they may move, or during intubation, for example, we may exacerbate their injury. What I will say about this situation is that when you're faced with a patient that does have a potentially unstable and already has a neurological injury as a result of cervical spine trauma, the most important thing that you need to realize is that that collar that they're wearing is not doing anything. The collar is purely a marker that this person has an unstable spine. You need to assign a good nurse or yourself to stand by the bedside and supervise that person. You need to take care of their analgesia, give them some antiemetics, and try and keep them as still as possible. Whenever you're moving that person, it's done with the team, with clear instructions from a leader. The practice of leaving a patient with a potentially unstable neck injury in a collar on a bed in an emergency department without a supervising nurse is really fraught with danger. We all place way too much faith in collars, and there's quite a lot of good evidence out there that they don't really immobilize necks at all. They can be very uncomfortable, and even a well-applied collar allows for a pretty reasonable range of movement, and especially in someone that may be intoxicated or head injured, they really do need to be supervised very closely. Now, there's a whole other podcast on the management of critically neurologically injured patients, which I'm not going to go into, so we'll move on to the grey areas in the middle. So the patients that don't obviously have a neurological injury at this time, and yet you cannot clear them using the Nexus or the Canadian C-spine rules, or potentially both in tandem. This group of patients clearly needs to be imaged, and most small hospitals in Australia have traditionally relied upon plain film radiography, so getting a AP, a lateral, and a transoral view of the dens to try and clear this patient. I think that in the last 5-10 years there's been a lot of evidence that's come out saying that this is not the right thing to do. The decision-making tools which I've discussed previously don't tell you what type of imaging to do. They really just tell you that the patient does require some form of imaging. The tradition which has been handed down to us and is taught in still many of the resuscitation courses and trauma courses that we attend would be that we need to get a 3-picture view, and if that's all good, we can clear the patient. However, when you go back and look at the actual sensitivity of plain film radiology for cervical spine trauma, it's really very terrible. It's depending on which sort of mechanism of injury and what type of injury you're looking for, it can be as low as 50% sensitive, up to 75%, and that's taking patients in a study group who are getting their images read by radiologists who know that they're in a study So they're going to be doing their absolute best to find it. And I don't know about you, but I'm probably not as good as that radiologist, so I'm going to miss even more injuries than the radiologists in the studies. And I'm not trying to say that radiologists miss things. This isn't about how good you are at reading x-rays or CTs. This is just a characteristic of the test. All tests have a sensitivity and a specificity, and for plain film radiology, we know that it's not that great. So, what do we do with the patient? We know that they need to have some sort of imaging done. We can get a plain film, but we know that even if the plain film's normal, that really that's not going to be enough to reassure us that this patient's okay. Most patients are going to need to go on and have a CT scan done to really try and up the sensitivity of that imaging and reassure us that we haven't missed anything disastrous. So, this is a bit of a dilemma. If you're in a small town, you don't have a CT scanner, what are you going to do? Well, I think it comes back to the mechanism. It comes back to the energy. It comes back to your gut feeling about how bad is this injury. If the person is requiring imaging because they've just crept out of the exclusion criteria for the Nexus or the C-spine rules from Canada, then maybe you can hang your hat on plain film radiology if you really think it's very unlikely that they do have a significant spine injury and they don't have any tenderness or any of the other factors, and they've gotten in, say, because they're just over 65 or, you know, they fell from just above the allowable height in the C-spine rules. But you're not in a evidence-rich environment when you're making that call. You can be assured that if this patient were in a major teaching hospital, they would probably get a pan scan. They'd probably get their head, neck, and their upper chest examined by a CT scan and a radiologist read of that. And I don't really see why a rural hospital should be offering an inferior standard of care in the face of such a disastrous consequence if we miss it. So, for me, I'm going to get the CT. And I've actually given one of our radio techs that I work with a license to slap me in the side of the face if I order a plain film on a trauma patient with a decent mechanism, because over the last couple of years I've noticed that whenever I order plain films, I get a very wishy-washy report back, and it quite rightly says, plain films normal, cannot exclude serious neck injury. And for me, this is really a waste of time. In the US, there's a tendency to go straight to MRI for a lot of patients that have symptomatic neck injuries. And in a lot of parts of the world, patients get pan scanned from the top of their head to the bottom of their pelvis for really quite minor degrees of trauma. So I no longer feel guilty about the small dose of radiation that I'd be administering if I were getting CT necks on all of these patients. I'm not going to do it lightly. I'm going to use a evidence-based validated decision tool to justify my use of radiology. But if I'm going to order radiology, I'm going to go with the one that is going to give me the answer. I really don't think that flipping the coin on a plain film is adequate in the modern era of medicine. Okay, let's wrap it up. A bit of a summary. If you're in a remote hospital, you have plain film or no plain films at all, and you're dealing with a patient that has a cervical spine trauma, you really can break them down into three main groups and maybe one subdivision. So the groups would be asymptomatic low-risk patients that you can clear on clinical grounds using the Nexus criteria plus or minus the Canadian C-spine rules, depending on what your personal bias is. That group of patients should be cleared if they can be, but you really need to apply the rule very strictly so that you're doing the right thing by the patient. The third group of patients is the ones that obviously have a neurological injury associated with their bony injury to their spine, and these patients need to get out of there quickly, and you need to watch them like a hawk and don't rely on the brain tourniquet, also known as the cervical spine collar, to do the job for you, because it just won't work. So you need to supervise that patient very closely and try and avoid any secondary injury that may result from hypoxia or hypovolemia. So do their ABCs very, very well. The middle group of patients is the tricky one. I've laid out my biases and what I believe in this podcast. I think that these patients should get a CT if you're going to do some form of radiology. The only time I think that plain films still creep into the equation would be for the patient that your gut tells you is really very low risk, and the only reason that they failed the Nexus or the Canadian criteria was because of some minor idiosyncrasies, such as they were 65 years and 2 days old, so you couldn't say they were under 65, or they are a fit, young, healthy person who's fallen from just above the allowable 3 feet, and you are convinced that they don't have an injury based on everything else in the clinical picture. In that person, you may rely on plain film radiology, but just be aware of the sensitivity and really get it read by somebody that does this on a day-to-day basis. We all sit through the courses where we try and learn how to read these things, but if you really want to maximise the sensitivity, I don't think there's any shame in getting a senior and experienced radiologist to have a look at the films with you. We live in the age of telemedicine where everything can be emailed in a short space of time. So if it's my neck on the line, I'd much prefer that you ask the radiologist, and your medico defence lawyer will probably agree with me. Alright, so that's about it for episode number one of Broom Docs Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd really love to get some feedback on the website, and please drop me a line or leave a comment at the bottom of this post. Thanks for listening. See you later.